Welcome back to Down These Mean Streets, where this week we're saluting one of the giants of the golden age of radio, William Conrad. If you don't know his name, you probably know his voice. By his own estimation, he played over 7,500 roles on radio, and his career in entertainment spanned 5 decades. He passed away 20 years ago this week, and today we're celebrating the life and work of this radio legend. Conrad was born John William Cann, Jr. in Lexington, Kentucky on September 27, 1920, and he started his show business career as an announcer, writer, and director for station KMPC in Los Angeles. He served as a fighter pilot in World War II and came out of the war as a producer and director in the Armed Forces Radio Service. After the war, he was in demand as a supporting actor in dozens of shows, including Escape, Nightbeat, Pete Kelly's Blues, and The Adventures of Sam Spade. He was such a frequently heard voice on the air that his familiarity with audiences almost cost him what would become his most celebrated role. That role was U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon on the CBS Western Gunsmoke, a role Conrad played from 1952 until the series left the air in 1961. The show was developed at the request of CBS President William Paley, who wanted a series that could be a Philip Marlowe of the Old West. The series was developed by Norman MacDonald, who at the time was producing and directing The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, starring Gerald Moore. Series writer John Meston pushed for William Conrad to play the role of Dillon, and MacDonald was won over minutes into the actor's audition. Matt Dillon was a man who lived by the gun, but he struggled with taking a life, even when it was in the line of duty. Even though he walked a beat in Dodge City, Kansas, he had a great deal in common with the radio detectives we've heard on the podcast as he fought to bring law and order to the lawless West. Today, Gunsmoke is heralded as a radio classic. It helped to usher in the era of the adult Western on radio, and it set a high mark for drama in general. Radio historian John Dunning wrote, "Gunsmoke is routinely placed among the best shows of any kind and any time." And much of that reputation is due to William Conrad and his performance as Matt Dillon. So now we'll hear William Conrad in Gunsmoke in The Photographer, originally aired on CBS on May 5, 1956. The regular Gunsmoke supporting cast is heard. Parley Bear plays Deputy Chester Proudfoot, George Ellis is Kitty Russell, and Howard McNear is Doc Adams. Also in the cast are Larry Dobkin, Harry Bartell, and James Nusser. The script was by John Dunkel, and the show is directed by Norman MacDonald.
Gunsmoke, brought to you by Chesterfield. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed, thanks to Accuray. They satisfy the most. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad, the transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Thank you. walk is just what I needed, Mr. Dillon. I sure been sleepy today.
You got spring fever, Chester.
I guess so. It is nice weather, ain't it? Won't be long now, the cattle drive will be starting.
Yeah, and the streets will be full of Texas cowhands looking for trouble.
Yes, sir. But you know, I'm almost looking forward to them this year.
You know, come July, you'll be pining for this peace and quiet.
Maybe, but not right now. Maybe I'll just stop by the tonsorial, Mr. Dillon, if it's all right with you.
Sure. Well, what for?
Well, like you said, it's spring. They got a bath there. Besides, it's time to get unsewed.
You better leave them on. We might have a late frost.
I don't know. I'm beginning to itch some, and Hey, what's that crowd in front of the Long Branch?
I don't know.
What do you suppose it is, Mr. Dillon? Hey, maybe it's a medicine show.
Well, let's go take a look, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, whatever it is, that fellow sure has drew a crowd, and that's a fact.
Uh-huh.
There he is. Miss Kitty's talking to him.
Yeah.
Well, guess there can't be no trouble, then.
Oh, hello, Matt.
Oh, Kitty.
Hey, Marshal, you come to have your picture took, too?
Yeah. The Marshal looked real smart in a tintype, huh?
You tell him to.
So that's it. You're taking pictures, huh?
That's right, Matt. This is Professor Jacoby. He calls himself an artist of the camera.
Well, forevermore. So there's one of them things I've been hearing about.
That's right. Oh, well, keep your hands. What? Keep your hands off it, my good man. It's a very sensitive instrument.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, you're Marshal Dillon, I take it, sir.
That's right.
Well, I'm glad to meet you, Marshal. I was coming to look you up directly. Quite naturally, you're one of the subjects I most wish to immortalize with the camera.
Oh, is that so?
Certainly, certainly. Western Marshal is one of our great heroes back east.
They are, you don't say.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes,
Professor.
What is it? What's that little tent for?
Oh, that's where I do my developing, sir.
Oh, developing?
Why, of course. Pyro and soda, you understand.
Well.
And the plate must be developed immediately before it dries.
Oh,
naturally. Now, miss.
Well, I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
You stand aside, will you? Yes, if you'll just relax, miss.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to shoot you, you know.
Okay.
Let me see. Now, that's not precisely what I'm after.
Huh?
What we need is another subject.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, another person. You, sir, would you step up, please? Yes, you.
Me?
You.
Me?
That's right.
How do you like that? He's going to immortalize old Toad.
Just come right over here, sir. That's it, that's it. Now, miss, if you'll just stand beside him.
Him?
Well, anything for art's sake, you know? We want this to look absolutely authentic.
I think I'm going to like this, Miss Kitty.
Now, don't go getting any ideas, Toad.
Ah, that's fine, that's fine. Now, miss, if you'll just look up at him with that, well, you know what I mean.
No, I don't know.
Well,
Professor, why don't you just take your pictures of people the way you find them? They'll be authentic enough.
No, of course, Marshal, I meant no offense.
That's all right, man. Go ahead, Professor.
Yes, of course, that's it.
Hey, where's he going? Look, ducking under that black cloth there.
Hey, you've got to have a hard time crawling into that little box.
Oh, that's good.
That's good now. That's good now. Don't take your eyes off the camera and don't move a muscle while I'm counting. You understand?
Uh-huh.
All right, take a big breath. Hold it. One Missouri, two Missouri, three Missouri, four Missouri, five Missouri, Missouri, seven Missouri, eight Missouri, nine Missouri, 10 Missouri, 11. Good, good.
Well, ain't that something, Mr. Dillon?
You know, I want to see that picture, Kitty. You look like the camera was a rattlesnake.
Well, it might as well have been. I'm glad it's over.
And now, Marshal. Marshal, maybe you will oblige.
Well, no, thank you, Professor. Maybe later, huh?
And perhaps I'll take one of these gentlemen here. You, sir. You look like a gunfighter.
No? Grubbs may try to look and act like a gunman, Professor, but he's not very desperate.
Oh. Oh, I see. Perhaps you have someone in your jail, Marshal.
No, not at the moment.
I know what the Eastern public wants, sir, what it wants to see.
Dance hall girls and desperados, gunfighters, savage Indians, the violence of the West. And it's the violence I'm after most of all. That's what will sell my photographs.
Professor, then all you have to do is wait.
Wait for how long?
Oh, maybe a few weeks when the trail herds start coming.
Oh, I haven't got a few weeks, Marshal.
Well, then I guess we can't help you.
Well, don't worry, Marshal. I'll manage.
No? How?
You'll see. I'm a man of ideas, Marshal.
That whistling man, Bobby Haggard, really started something. Tonight, we'd like to introduce a player piano that could have come right out of the Long Branch in Dodge City.
Packs more pleasure, packs more pleasure. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
It stands to reason a cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. By Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Morning, Sam.
Howdy, Marshal.
Morning, Matt.
Oh, hello, Kitty. If you mind if I sit down?
Well, I haven't yet, have I?
What are you grinning about?
I saw your picture. What was that you said to me about rattlesnakes?
Oh, yeah, it was pretty bad, wasn't it? Well, maybe if you didn't have to hold still for so long.
Sure. Anyway, you're immortalized now. The professor will have your face all over the papers back east.
If they'll print it.
Matt, seriously.
Hmm?
I don't like that man.
Oh?
There's something about him. I don't know what it is.
Well, he seems all right, Kitty. Maybe you're just not used to photographers.
Well, neither are you.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, Chester.
Mr. Dillon, you better come.
Now, what's the matter?
Out at the end of Bridge Street, they just found old Toad, and he's dead.
Dead?
But that ain't all. He's been scalped. What do you make of it, Matt?
I don't know, Doc.
Neither do I. There hasn't been any Indian trouble lately. Surely no Indian come this close to town.
Doc, it wasn't an Indian. That's not the way they use a knife.
Well, then, who did do it, Mr. Dillon? Old Toad wasn't much good, but he never hurt nobody. There's another funny thing, Matt. Doesn't look like it was done right here, but like it was done over there by that building. And then he was dragged out here into the open.
Yeah, out in the open. End of the sunlight. Now, wait a minute.
What are you looking for, Mr. Dillon?
This right here, Chester.
Well, I don't see nothing.
Those three little marks on the ground there. You know what makes marks like that?
No, what?
The three-legged stand they use for a surveyor's instrument. Or a camera.
Camera? Matt, no man would do that just for a picture.
Well, there's one way to find out. Professor, looks like you're packing. You going someplace?
Yes, Marshal. I've covered Dodge pretty thoroughly. Now I want to go out onto the plains and get some pictures. You know, buffalo hunters, Indians.
Aren't you leaving kind of sudden?
Well, what do you mean? I've been planning to go down into the Indian territory.
Well, they might be pretty dangerous right now, Professor.
Oh, I'm not timid, Marshal.
Oh, I know that. But did you hear there's Indian trouble starting? A man was scalped this morning right here in Dodge.
Yes, I heard something of it. But I'm not frightened.
Why not, Professor? Because you know it wasn't an Indian that did it?
Just what do you mean, Marshal?
I'd just like to know how you were able to get there and take a picture of Toad before anybody else knew anything about it.
Perhaps I was just lucky, Marshal. I met the man who found him.
I think it was more than luck.
Are you accusing me of killing that man?
Maybe you didn't do it yourself, but I think you hired it done.
Can you prove that?
I can when I find the man you hired.
The whole thing is ridiculous, Marshal. Besides, he was nothing but a scavenger, a derelict.
He was a man, and it was murder. Whoever did it will hang for
it. Well, it's no concern of mine. Unless, of course, I can take a photograph of the hanging.
You'll do anything for a picture, won't you?
Well, almost anything, Marshal. Like I told that girl, anything for art's sake. And that was a good picture I got of Toad, Marshal. Perhaps you'd like to see it.
No, thanks.
Well, it's going to be quite a feather in my cap when I take it back east to Harper's.
Maybe you won't take it back east, Jacoby. This might be one picture you paid too high a price for.
Why didn't you lock him up?
I got no proof against him, Doc, unless I can find the man who actually did it. And I got no idea who that is. Jacoby's been seen around town with a lot of men, but nobody's special.
He's liable to skip town on you.
Well, I hope so.
What's that?
Well, I figure he's going down into Indian territory. He won't go alone. Even he's not that foolish. And a logical one to go along with him is a man he'd already hired to do a job for him.
Yeah, that's so.
Anyway, it's the last chance I got.
Well, the town sure stirred up about it. You'd never have thought old Toad had a single friend.
Sure, they're upset. They think it was Indians.
And the professor put the picture on display in the window of the Dodge House. Did you know that?
Yeah, I heard.
And maybe it was him started the talk about calling the cavalry out against the Indians.
Well, he'd like nothing better than an Indian war to photograph.
What kind of a man is that?
I don't know, Doug.
Mr. Dillon, Moss Grimmick says the professor left town just before dawn this morning.
Alone?
Nope. Tom Grubbs was with him.
Tom Grubbs. Sure. A two-bit would-be gunman. All right. Now all we gotta do is catch up with him.
Where are you listening to Gunsmoke? In your favorite easy chair? Or out driving? Oh, there you are. In the kitchen. Say, you want to make whatever you're doing more enjoyable? Have a Chesterfield. Enjoy Chesterfield's better taste and mildness. It stands to reason a cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. Buy Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Mm-hmm.
like it, Mr. Dillon. I don't like it a little bit.
What, Chester?
All this Indian sign.
Now, you just keep your eyes open. We'll manage. I guess Jacoby will be happy. He should be getting all the pictures he can use. I notice he's stopped several times.
Pictures? I hope I never meet another photographer.
Well, maybe they aren't all like him, Chester.
Well, I hope not.
Hold up, Chester.
Hmm? What, Mr. Dillon?
Something over in that clump of weeds there.
Marshal.
What's the man? A white man. Mr. Dillon, it's Grubb.
Yeah, come on.
Marshal.
Mr. Dillon, he's been hurt bad. He's bleeding.
Yeah, he's been knifed.
Help me, Marshal.
Where's Jacoby?
Oh, there. Somewhere, I don't know. I ran and hid.
What happened?
Indian. Cheyenne. I told Jacoby, but he wouldn't listen. I tried to tell him, but he wouldn't listen.
Told him what?
About the burial ground. Bad enough just being here. And then him trying to take pictures of Cheyenne. There was only three of them. When he saw him taking a picture at the burial ground,
my goodness, that's bad, Mr. Dillon. Uh-huh. They get awful mad when somebody fools around the burying place.
What did they do, Grubbs?
He attacked us. Fought one of them off, and I ran and hid. I guess they couldn't find me.
Grubbs, why don't you tell me about it?
About what?
About Toad.
All right, I'll tell you. Professor gave me a lot of money. I guess I shouldn't have done it. If Marshall?
Yeah.
I didn't even get my picture took. Ain't that...
He sure was some gunman, killing a helpless little old man for money.
Yeah. Now let's see about Jacoby now.
Hey, Mr. Dillon, you think them Cheyenne might still be around?
No, they just showed up by now, Chester.
There's the burial ground. Hey, look. There's his camera.
Yeah. All smashed.
And his pictures? All scattered around, or is it... My gracious.
Chester, huh? Over here.
That ain't a nice sight, is it, Mr. Dillon?
No. There's a kind of justice in it, Chester.
Yeah. They did to him just what he had Grubbs do to old Toad.
Well, we better bury him. Then maybe we better gather up those pictures.
What for?
They'll send them back east for him. Maybe they'll be immortal like he hoped. Who knows? He might turn out to be a big hero.
And wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. Not there have been heroes like that before. All right, come on.
In a moment, our star, William Conrad.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
A cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips. Chesterfield, mild. Yet they satisfy the most.
You know, At best, it was hard to scratch out a living on the high plains. But next week, hunger, disease, and a baby combined to defeat a man. And that was the West. Good night.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The special music for Gunsmoke was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Ray Kemper and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin, Harry Bartell, and James Nusser. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty.
Live modern. Smoke L&M.
Live modern. Change to L&M.
Live modern. Smoke L&M. Only with L&M can you enjoy the full, exciting flavor of today's finest tobaccos. No other cigarette, plain or filter, gives you the full, exciting flavor you get through the pure white miracle tip. So light up. Free up. Let your taste come alive. Live modern. Smoke L&M.
Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on Gunsmoke.
From Gunsmoke. The series would spawn a television version that ran for 20 years, but Conrad was never seriously considered for the TV role of Matt Dillon. Like his fellow radio cast members, he was given a token audition, but his heavy frame kept him from landing the role of the Marshal on screen. James Arness would star as Dillon on TV, and that show premiered while the radio version was still running in 1955. Conrad would go on to have a successful television career both on and off camera. He served as the narrator for Rocky and Bullwinkle and The Fugitive. In fact, it's his memorable prologue narration for The Fugitive that gives us our podcast title for this week, Fate Moves Its Huge Hand. In 1971, he finally landed a lead TV series role as the title character on Cannon. Conrad played heavy-set private eye Frank Cannon for 5 seasons and was nominated for 2 Emmys. He'd play more TV detectives over his career, including 13 episodes as Nero Wolfe on NBC in 1981, and his final on-camera role as a curmudgeonly district attorney for 5 seasons on Jake and the Fat Man. He didn't play Jake. And he got practice as a detective years before, in 1950, when he was elevated from the supporting cast of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe to fill in for an episode for the show's absent star, Gerald Moore. It's a shame Conrad didn't have more chances to play Marlowe or the opportunity to star in his own radio detective series. In this episode, he manages to be true to the character established by Moore, but he puts his own spin on Marlowe to great effect. We've heard William Conrad as the Philip Marlowe of the Old West, and now we'll hear him as Philip Marlowe himself in The Anniversary Gift, originally aired on CBS on April 11, 1950. Directed by Norman McDonald and written by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt, the cast in this one includes John Daner, Larry Dobkin, Gene Bates, Ralph Moody, and Harry Bartell.
Thank you.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or the grave. This time, a platinum wristwatch, a body on a lonely strip of beach, and a case of heart failure in a Beverly Hills garage all added up to blackmail, 25 years old. And a killer who would never be caught. It happened like this.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. In just a moment, tonight's story. But first, a message from the Ford dealers of America.
The whole country's talking about the great 1950 Ford. Listen to what Mr. Carl Moore of Kingston, Pennsylvania, one of more than 420,000 delighted owners, says about his new Ford.
I leave my car out on the street a lot in winter, but you'd never know it to look at my 50 Ford's paint job. It's still as new-looking as when I bought it. I'll never stop wondering how Ford can sell a car that stands up so well for so little money. And speaking of getting a lot for little money, my Ford gives me up to 22 miles to a gallon of gas.
Yes, it's hard for Ford owners to keep the good news to themselves. The news about the economy of the big new Ford. From its low initial price to its high resale value. From its low cost of maintenance to its thrift on gas and oil. Ford is a real economy buy. But prove it for yourself. Your neighborhood Ford dealer has the facts on Ford economy. And he'll be glad to have you test drive the big 1950 Ford in your own way.
And now we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Anniversary Gift.
Turn left at the next corner, cabby.
Okay. Boy, this Beverly Hills in the sunny afternoon is really something, ain't it?
Yeah.
Wide streets, classy homes. Boy, these jokers got it made. Some life. Nothing ever gets to them to bother them except the income tax, maybe. Yeah. Here it is, mister. 8834 Beverly Road. What a joint.
Yeah. Wait for me, huh?
Sure, mister.
The door was answered by a girl of about 16, a tall, slender girl with dark eyes, too deep for her years.
Oh, come in, won't you? I believe Dad's expecting you.
She led me across a living room as dignified as the lobby of a bank to a door that she opened.
If you'll wait here in the library, I'll tell Dad you've come.
The library of Stanley Towner, my new client, was as somber as his living room, except for one thing. Over a fireplace that half-filled one wall was a life-size portrait of a woman. A most beautiful woman. Could have been a painting of what the girl who had just left would look like in another 25 years. I was still staring at the picture when Stanley Towner came in.
That's a portrait of Margaret, my wife. We lost her 1 week ago today.
I'm sorry, Mr. Towner.
Well, we'd been expecting it for over a year. The doctors had warned us, but even when you're braced for a blow like that, it...
Yes, I know what you mean.
It was her heart, Marlowe. She was coming home from a shopping trip in Westwood last Tuesday evening when it happened. She had her own car and was just pulling into the garage here when the attack seized her. Catherine, my daughter, and I both heard her car hit the garage wall. We ran out and found her. The doctor did everything possible. Wednesday morning, she was dead. I'm sorry.
It's all right, Mr. Towner.
I must tell you all this because the reason I called you here has to do with Margaret's death.
I don't understand.
I've got to get Margaret's watch back.
A what? A watch?
Yes, a wristwatch. It's, I'll try to explain. I loved my wife very deeply, Marlowe. Now that I've lost her, the most important thing in the world to me is the preservation of her memory. Can you understand that?
Well, it's natural that you'd cling to things that remind you of her, Mr. Towner. Now, what about the watch?
It's lost. Somewhere in Camino Beach. You know where that is?
Yes, a few miles below Redondo.
Yes, that's right. The day Margaret died, I had taken her watch with me to have it repaired. I went down the coast on some business, and on the way back, I stopped at Camino Beach for lunch. a place called the Trade Winds.
You had the watch with you when you went in?
Yes, in my overcoat pocket. I came out and got in my car and was halfway back to my office before I realized it was gone. I've got to get it back, Marlowe.
How much is it worth?
In cash, about $500, but to me, now, it's worth 20 times that.
What's the watch like?
It's a Benrus, platinum, and set with emeralds.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it to Margaret on our 20th wedding anniversary. There's an inscription on the back to Margaret from Stanley with eternal love. I know that watch is somewhere in Camino Beach. Can you find it and bring it back here to me?
There's nothing more you can tell me?
Unfortunately, that's all there is.
I'll do my best, but I can't guarantee a thing. The cabbie waiting outside drove me back to the gas station on Wilshire, where I picked up my own car, fresh off the grease rack, and headed for the ocean and the sunset. It was getting dark by the time I reached Camino Beach, a rickety, salt-cake little town jumbled in between the highway and the surf. Now, my first stop was the Tradewinds Cafe, a waterfront shack on spindly legs standing knee-deep in a smelly backwash. It only took 10 minutes to find that there was nothing there for me. After that, I drew a blank at each of the three hock shops in town. Wound up an hour and a half later, no farther than the sidewalk curb, where I watched a traffic cop brand my tire with his parking marker, plant a heavy foot on my bumper to steady his bike, and light a cigarette.
Hiya. Is this your car?
Yeah. What is it? Am I overparked?
Nope, not yet. Just borrowing your bumper a minute. Mine?
Of course not. Got a lot of scratches already. Say, that's a fancy chalk label you put on the side of that tire there. Z, the mark of Zorro, huh?
No, the mark of Ziegler. That's me. Just a little thing I worked out to add a personal touch to my business. You're a stranger around here, aren't you?
Yeah, from L.A.
Uh-huh. Saw you coming out of the pawn shop there. You don't look like the type.
Well, I'm not, as long as my luck holds. Actually, a friend of mine lost a wristwatch here in town. I'm trying to locate it.
Pretty good watch, is it?
Yeah, good enough. The really tough part is that it has a very big sentimental value. I've tried all three of the pawn shops in town, but no dice.
You know, if I had a friend who'd lost a good watch, I think I'd check in at Sean's bicycle shop on 3rd Street.
Well, thanks a lot, Ziegler.
Don't mention it. Oh, incidentally, I wouldn't bother to tell him who sent me down if I was you. So long.
Hello. Hello, anybody there? Hello, Sean?
What do you want? I'm closed for the night.
I'm interested in a lady's wristwatch, Mr. Sean.
Are you now? Just how does that bring you to a bicycle shop?
Look, we both know you're a fence, so let's not waste time on that. The watch I'm after is platinum, set with emeralds, and has an inscription on the back. To Margaret from Stanley with eternal love.
A bright sentiment, I'm sure.
Have you seen the watch?
No.
Look, Sean, either I beat your tongue as limber as a St. Bernard's ears, or you accept this $20 in exchange for some straight information. Peacefully. Now take your choice and take it fast.
$20. What kind of a choice is that? But I don't have the watch, Bucco.
But you have seen it.
Oh, yes. 5-6 days ago, a fella brought that watch in here, wanted to know what it was worth. I said 500. He laughed in my face.
Who was this guy?
You mentioned something about $20.
Oh, yes. Here. All right, now give.
Yeah, that's better. His name is Chip Menashe. In summers, he works in the concessions in the pier. In winters, he's nothing more than a beachcomber. Lives in a little room out on the pier behind the shooting gallery, and that, Bucko, is your $20 worth.
It had better be, Shane, or I'll be back for my change. The amusement pier was deserted. When I finally found the one-room shack tacked on behind the shooting gallery, it was dark and quiet. I knocked once, got no answer. So I pushed a wad of rags out of a broken pane of glass in the door, reached inside, and unsnapped the lock and went in. With a light from the one naked overhead bulb, I started through the room. On a packing crate that passed for a dresser, I found a week-old newspaper clipping. It said the body of one Leon Stice of Camino had been found on an isolated beach Wednesday morning, shot in the chest. No apparent reason. Stice was survived by his wife, Nancy, of 320 Front Street. I got real busy wondering why a bum like Chip Menashe saved old newspaper clippings of murder stories when a noise outside turned me toward the open door.
What are you doing in my place?
You weren't home, so I came in to wait.
You a cop or something?
No, I'm no cop, Menashe. The name's Marlowe.
Huh?
Maybe we can do business. Sit down.
I don't get you.
I collect old watches. A mutual friend sent me, Menashe.
Yeah?
I'm interested in ladies' watches, particularly. Maybe something in platinum with emeralds.
Okay, Pally, what's the proposition?
Nothing until I see the merchandise. Now, how about putting it on display, huh?
I can't hear you, Pally.
Ah, come on. Now, where's the watch?
Don't rush me, mister. Don't rush me. It'll get you nowhere.
All right. Make me a proposition.
$10,000?
Ten thousand?
Uh-huh.
You must be out of your mind.
Yeah, we'll see who's out of their minds. That's a very valuable watch. Maybe you better get out of here and add it all up again.
Yeah, maybe I'd better at that. But, Menashe, don't go away because I'll be back.
I won't go away. I know when I'm sitting on top of the pile.
As I walked away, a hunch kept whispering to me that the body of a guy named Leon Stice found on a lonely beach was somehow tied in. So I decided to pay a call on his widow. I drove down Front Street to number 320. But there was nobody home. As a matter of fact, the only sign of life on the entire block was a red neon pelican and a blue neon martini glass above the door of a bar across the street. So I walked over and went in. A couple of questions later, I found Nancy Stice sitting alone in the back. The offer to buy a drink was the only introduction I needed.
Sure, you can buy me a drink. Hey, Charlie.
Okay, Nancy.
I'm an old friend of your husband's, Nancy. I just heard.
That louse didn't have no friends.
Here you are, Nancy. Thanks. Something for you, mister?
No. Here, keep
Thanks.
It.
Mud in your eye. Nah. I got nothing against Leon Stice. Except 25 years of living with him in a Camino Beach rat hole on nothing. That's all.
Any idea why he was killed?
For the role he was carrying.
After what you just said, that makes no sense.
That's the way it was. And I didn't get one red cent of it. It was all gone when they found him.
Did you tell the cops he had money on him?
Nah. I hate cops.
Yeah, sure. Where did Leon get this dough?
He told me he ran into an old acquaintance who was staking him. Some guy named Martin Vogel who used to live here in Camino Beach years ago.
Martin Vogel was staking him? To what?
Leon said him and Vogel was going in business together. The cash was in advance. Oh, sure. He was going to be such a big shot.
What kind of business, Nancy?
Just between you and me, the only business that crummy mind of his would work on was blackmail. Take it from me. Now, how about another drink for his grief-stricken widow, huh?
I'll leave a buck on the bar on my way out.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, a brief message from the Ford Dealers of America.
From coast to coast, Ford owners agree the big new Ford brings you more for your money. More in comfort, more in performance, and more in economy. But only through personal experience can you appreciate the restful ease of Ford's famous midship ride and the luxurious comfort of Ford's non-sag, foam rubber cushion front seat. Only by driving this great car can you enjoy its smooth power and solid roadability. And only by getting the facts about Ford's economy can you understand that so powerful, so smooth riding, and so beautiful a car can cost so little to buy. To run and to maintain. But see how much the new Ford gives you. Find out how much it saves you. Yes, before you buy any car at any price, it will pay you to stop by your local Ford dealers. Take the wheel of the 100-horsepower V8 or its companion in quality, the 95-horsepower 6.
Once you've driven it, you'll agree. The new Ford is the one truly fine car in the low-price field.
Now we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Anniversary Gift.
I left the Pelican Club, got into my car, and started for the local law on the chance that I could learn something more about the new question mark I'd picked up named Martin Vogel. 10 minutes later, I parked my car under the cracked globe that oozed sick purple light over a weather-beaten sign, Camino Beach Police. A fat sergeant huddled over what could have been the original teletype machine. When I presented my credentials, he jabbed a fat finger at a dirty glass door marked Captain Elvin Bush, Chief of Detectives. Inside, a small old man, neat in a clean white shirt, groomed silver hair and a gentle smile, was strapping on a shoulder holster when I put my license on his desk. When I stopped talking, he got up and extended an almost delicate hand.
I certainly hope we can help you, Mr. Marlowe. Martin Vogel, you say?
Yes, it might have been a long time ago, Captain, maybe even 25 years, if he was mixed up with the police at all. Do your records go back that far?
Oh, yes, by the Applecrate load. And I mean that literally, Mr. Marlowe. You see, in Camino Beach, police files, fixtures, and furniture are somewhat lacking. City appropriations only go where they show. Public bird baths, statues of the mayor, and... Oh, here. This bottom crate here. Marked, let's see.
1921 to 1930.
Figure he was arrested along in there, this Vogel?
Yeah, if he was arrested. Yeah, it's dusty, isn't it?
Well, the cards are alphabetical.
Yeah. And let's see, Riker, Rooney, Stemple.
By the way, Mr. Marlowe, what's your angle?
I'm not sure, Captain. Svensson, Underley, Utterman, Van. Vogel, Martin.
Got it, eh?
Yeah, picture and all.
Bring it over here in the light.
Yeah. Martin Vogel arrested Camino Beach Hotel May 28, 1923 on warrant from Chicago, Illinois police. Returned to Chicago, sentenced to 5 years in state penitentiary for embezzlement. Arresting officer, patrolman Elvin Bush.
Picked him up myself, did I? Well, I've locked up a lot of people in the last 35 years.
Yeah, I guess you have it. Holy smokes.
Huh?
What? That can't be.
What is it, Mr. Marlowe? You look kind of pale.
There was no mistaking it. The time-yellowed picture of Martin Vogel made it plain. Vogel and my client, the distinguished Mr. Stanley Towner, were one and the same. That meant that Towner had lied to me, and more important, had no doubt killed Leon Stice, who was blackmailing him because he knew he was Vogel. I left Captain Bush, piled into my car, and pointed it back for the amusement pier, where one way or another I was going to get Chip Menasche to fill in a few remaining blanks for me. Marlowe, Menasche. I want to talk business.
Okay, Marlowe. Looks like I doped it right. I thought you'd come back.
All right. Now get up. And listen hard. I want the watch and the story that comes with it.
I told you my price. It's still 10 grand.
You're bluffing, Menasche. You know the watch means money, but you don't know why.
Yeah, Mr. Weisenhardt.
All right, now come on. Talk.
Okay, quit. I'll tell you what you want. I took the watch from Leon Stice. I found him dead on the beach. It was clenched in his fist.
And the dough you're spending?
Was in his wallet. Let me up, will you?
All right, come on. Now sit over there. Hands in your lap. School isn't out yet.
What more do you want, Marlowe?
How do you tie the watch in with Stanley Towner?
What makes you think I did?
The fact that I was sent here to Camino Beach and the fact that you were ready and waiting for somebody. Well?
Okay. I was lucky. When I read about Stice in the papers, I also just happened to read another article, an oddity, you might say, about a woman in Beverly Hills, a rich man's wife who got a heart attack in her car just as she pulled into her garage. A woman called Towner, front name Margaret, wife of a big-shot broker, also called Towner, front name Stanley. I went from there. I was shrewd.
Yeah, genius. Okay, now give me the watch. Come on, let's have it.
All right, get your mitts off. Here. Now you're real happy, Muscles. Happy that you... Hey, cops.
Hey, Menasche. Wait a minute! By the time I got to the door, he was halfway across the boardwalk to his car. But Captain Bush and his sergeant were ready and waiting. When Menashe was next to the gun he kept in his glove compartment, the spotlight on the squad car slashed through the dark, found him, and froze him in a position.
We've got you, Menashe. You'd better quit. Menashe, do you hear me?
Yeah.
No, you listen, Papa. Let him have it, Becker.
The windshield sprang into little pieces.
That got him. Come on, Becker.
I waited until Captain and Becker were next to the body and had lifted it off the steering wheel. Then I moved quietly along the side of the buildings as far as the squad car. There, I turned and started back toward them.
Hey, what happened? Oh, it's you, Captain.
What brings you around here, Mr. Marlowe?
A guy in town told me that somebody named Chip Menashe might give me a lead on Martin Vogel.
You won't be able to now. That's Menashe.
What?
We wanted him for a week-old stick-up murder.
Stick-up murder? That guy on the beach?
The same. Say, Becker, you find the money on him?
Right, some $300, Captain.
Good. Well, you better call for the wagon now.
Check.
Funny thing, Mr. Marlowe. One fingerprint did it.
Oh, how's that?
That guy on the beach, Leon Stice. He found his empty wallet in the sand next to him. It had an isinglass front over his driver's license with a thumbprint that wasn't his.
But was Chip Menashe's, huh?
Well, we got on to Menashe because he was spreading a lot of dough around. Today, Becker got down here and lifted one of his prints.
That cinched it, huh?
Yes, that and the shot he just threw at me.
Yeah, strictly a stick-up killer who got caught.
Marlowe, about this Martin Vogel, you still want to let it go that the Beverly Hills police are going to get in touch?
I think so. Good night, Captain Bush.
The ride back to Beverly Hills was an uncomfortable hour and a half, cold and empty. I was glad that I had things to do like stop and start and shift gears. It kept me from thinking too much about a lot of things and a lot of people I wish I'd never heard of. People like Stanley Towner, who I had every reason to be against, but who I was starting to pull for. Stanley Towner, a man who would start it all over again after a single mistake made 25 years ago. A man who had fought to build good things, like a comfortable home, a marriage to a woman in a painting, a 16-year-old likeness named Catherine. But Stanley Towner, who was also a killer on a lonely stretch of beach far from home, destroying something rotten who would destroy him. A killer that nobody knew about, except me. Well, I pulled into the driveway and parked behind the car that had been Margaret's. As I got out, the light of the garage went on and the side door of the house opened. I felt almost wrong dropping my hand around the .38 in my side pocket.
Good evening, Mr. Marlowe. You have the watch?
Yeah. I had quite a tussle getting hold of it.
I imagined you would.
Menashe's dead, Mr. Towner.
Menashe? Who is Menashe, Mr. Marlowe?
The reason you hired me? The man who called you and dangled this bait? Here. You were right. It's a beautiful watch, Mr. Vogel.
Vogel? You know about it?
Yeah, they keep police files a long time. I know about everything. Except why you didn't go after the watch yourself.
Well, I was afraid.
Afraid to show yourself in the town where somebody might remember you, huh? The town in which you had committed a murder, is that it?
Yes, yes, that's it exactly.
Dad?
Huh?
Dad, is that you down there?
Yes, dear. Me, Mr. Marlowe.
Well, why don't you come into the house? It's so late and it's chilly. You'll catch a death of cold out there.
Yes, in a while, dear. Now go back to bed.
All right. Good night, Dad.
Good night, dear.
Well, good night, Mr. Marlowe, and please make him do as I say, will you?
Yes, I will, Catherine. Good night.
Do you mind if we go along to the police at once, Mr. Marlowe? I'd rather she didn't know right now. Tomorrow is soon enough. And can we take your car?
Yeah. The lights go off out here?
Yes. The switch is on the garage wall over there.
Okay, get in.
All right.
You know, Mr. Towner, I'm sorry about Catherine and the way she's going to be hit, but... hit by this thing?
The switch is there on your right. On your right, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah.
It was a very nice house.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Towner, you certainly loved Margaret a lot, didn't you?
Completely, Mr. Marlowe.
And her memory, too?
Why do you ask?
Something that makes me awfully happy. Mr. Towner, you didn't kill Leon Stice.
Marlowe, what are you saying?
That you never lost your wife's watch at Camino Beach. You never had it. She lost it herself.
Lost it when she struggled with Leon Stice just before she killed him for your sake, for you and Catherine and everything you've worked
for. No, Marlo, no.
Yes,
you...
Margaret had a bad heart. She knew she didn't have long to live. Also, she knew that Stice was blackmailing you. It figures, Tanner. And what also figures is that you'd rather pay for a murder that you didn't commit than to have Margaret's name soiled.
Yes, I would, and I will, because you can't prove any of this.
Correction, Mr. Tanner, I can. With your wife's car there in the garage, the car in which she died on what you said was her return from Westwood.
Which it was?
No, not according to a funny little chalk mark I just saw on one tire, it wasn't. A little white Z that a policeman named Ziegler in Camino Beach makes to check on parking time. And we can go on from there. Your confession won't mean a thing.
But, Marlowe, it will, it will, it must...
No. No, I guess it won't. I guess you can't hide the truth very often, can you?
No. Only once in a great while. And then, strangely enough, only when it seems like the right thing to do.
What do you mean? Why did you stop the motor?
There's one thing I haven't told you yet. The way things worked out in Camino Beach, Mr. Tanner. The police there think that Menashe killed Leon Stice, and they're happy that way. They never heard of you or your wife. And I don't see why they should now.
Yes.
I mean that nobody really knows the whole story.
Nobody except you, Marlowe.
Nobody, Mr. Tanner. Good night.
Thank you, Mr. Marlowe. Good night.
Philip Marlowe will be back in just a moment, but first, a word from the Ford Dealers of America.
Tonight, there are more than 420,000 enthusiastic 1950 Ford owners, and it seems as though most of them are talking about this car. Listen to what Judge Richmond B. Keach of Washington, D.C. has to say about his new Ford.
I was so satisfied with my 49 Ford that I decided to get a 50 as soon as they became available. I've been more than pleased with the 50. Truthfully, I see no cause to pay more when a Ford gives me all the performance, quiet, and comfort a man can ask for at such a reasonable price. The Ford is wonderfully easy to handle, particularly in traffic.
Yes, ask any Ford owner how he feels about his big new Ford, and he'll tell you it's tops for performance and for comfort. But prove it for yourself. Drop into your neighborhood Ford dealers and test drive this truly great car. You'll be amazed when you discover how little it costs to buy, to run, and to maintain. Do it tomorrow. Test drive the big new 1950 Ford.
Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time I was in the country where the night should have been nothing but peace and quiet. But a pair of angry eagles changed all that. One was solid gold and too close to a battered corpse. The other weighed 160 pounds and was too quick with his fists, in or out of the ring.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, tonight starred Bill Conrad, are produced and directed by Norman McDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Sammy Hill, John Daner, Gene Bates, Ralph Moody, Larry Dobkin, Harry Bartell, and Edgar Berrier. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Orant. This is Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Was the anniversary gift from the Adventures of Philip Marlowe. That'll do it for the podcast this week. Thanks for joining me for this tribute to William Conrad, who passed away 20 years ago this week February 11th, 1994. I hope you'll be back next week for a radio version of one of the greatest detective films of all time, The Maltese Falcon. We'll hear Humphrey Bogart, Mary Astor, and Sidney Greenstreet recreate their film roles from the 1941 classic in a broadcast from the program Academy Award. Until then, you can visit downthesemeanstreetspodcast.tumblr.com for more about these shows and their stars. You can like the show on Facebook, follow on Twitter at meanstsotrpod, and you can email me at downthesemeanstreetspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show in the iTunes Store or through your Stitcher app. Next week, The Maltese Falcon. Until then, good night, and happy listening.